ஸ்ரீ கிருஷ்ண பிரேம்ஸ் விசிட் டு ஸ்ரீ ரமண மகரிஷி பார்ட் டூ பை எஸ் சக்கரவர்த்தி கண்டினியூட் ஃப்ரம் தி மேஜூர் இஷ்யூ. மெனி ஹவ் ரீட் திலீப் குமார் ராய்ஸ் டிஸ்கிரிப்ஷன் ஆஃப் ஸ்ரீ கிருஷ்ண பிரேம்ஸ் விசிட் டு த மகரிஷி. எ ஃபாலோயிங் நரேஷன் அப்பியர்ஸ் டு பி எ ஃபார் மோர் டீடைல்ட் அண்ட் கிரெடிபிள் அக்கவுண்ட் தேன் எனி ஆஃப் தி அதர்ஸ் ப்ரீவியஸ்லி பப்ளிஷ்ட். It was written by the Bengali devotee who arranged Krishna Prem's 1948 South Indian pilgrimage and enumerates the many ways in which Bhagavan singled out Sri Krishna Prem to extend his grace while engaging the author presences with genuine insight into the intriguing personality and devotional character of a Western devotee who embraced orthodox Vaishnavism and yet, by the intensity of his devotion, was able to experience the essence of Bhagavan's true nature. Here, I must relate another incident. We were all sitting before the Maharishi and he said something in Tamil, his usual language. The crowd looked towards Gopalda and started laughing. It happened that Balaram Rindi, an ex-Pondicherry disciple, was present. The Maharishi was joking and saying something like, "How lucky we are today. Look, both Sri Krishna and Balaram, Krishna's brother, are with us today." By this time, Gopalda was more or less his normal jovial self again. I was much relieved to see that a thaw had set in, but he was still not quite the Gopalda we knew. He would still fall silent from time to time. If I remember rightly, it was on the second day of Gopalda's stay at ashram that the unforgettable thing happened. After breakfast, the Maharishi was sitting on the stone seat on the veranda and we were all sitting on the floor before him. Someone produced a small harmonium and requested Gopalda to sing a bhajan. I was sitting just behind him and he turned and asked me what he should sing. I whispered that any song would do. I must pass to relate my personal experience of Gopalda at Mittola. When I first saw him, I was naturally terribly impressed. For a moment or two, I just gazed at him. Then I recollected myself and saluted him with joined palms. My cultural prejudices did not allow me to touch his feet. But after the aarti in the temple, when Gopalda would bring the Pancha Pradeep to us, I noticed a change in him. His eyes would be half closed, turned to narrow slits. His hand holding the Pancha Pradeep would be trembling a little. His steps would be a little unsteady. Yes, superficially, he would appear to be a little inebriated. On the third or fourth day, something prompted me to ask him if I could touch his feet. He could not refuse. He just nodded his head. And that was the first time I touched his feet and offered him my pranam. Later, when we were all sitting outside and gossiping, Gopalda related this change in me and said something like, "Well, I hope this is not what Ma used to say. Too much bhakti is a sign of a thief." We all laughed heartily. The next thing was his performance as a musician. After the evening aarti, he would start playing a small harmonium and sing mostly Bengali kirtan he had learned from his guru. I could swear that antediluvian instrument had a few dead notes, and I'm quite sure he would often play wrong notes with great dexterity. Lastly, Gopalda sang as he pleased. That is to say, there would be open warfare between his voice and the tune. But believe it or not, he managed to create an atmosphere. Something would happen inside me. Poor fleeting words can scarcely convey what I felt. All that I can and will say is that one must hear it to know it, to realize what I cannot convey to you through words. Let us go back to Ramanashrama. Gopalda started to sing the well-known Bengali song, Kanu Kahe Rai. He could sing only the first line and the first part of the second. Then he fell with a bang onto the instrument. I could not and would not dare to speak about the Maharishi's reaction, but every other person there was horrified, aghast. I was at my wit's end. In fact, I was petrified. I just didn't know what to do. The upper part of Gopalda's body was lying motionless on the harmonium. I looked at the Maharishi. What did I see? I saw him looking unblinkingly at Gopalda. Everybody else was standing or sitting motionless. Probably none dared to breathe even. We were all spellbound. My mind ceased to function. I just sat there, waiting for I know not what. That tableau went on for some time. I fear I am not in a position to tell you how long, for after a while, Gopalda appeared to get back his senses, consciousness. Slowly, very slowly, he sat up. His face looked flushed, deep red, and it glowed. He got up and prostrated himself before the Maharishi. The Maharishi was still gazing at him, and then the Maharishi turned his face and was looking at, well, I know not what, because his sight turned inward, away from the scene before him. There was no sign, nothing to give us a clue. Then Gopalda stood up and started to leave the hall with unsteady steps. We followed him silently. After some time, Gopalda was the same Gopalda, the Gopalda I knew, loved and revered. Then came the day for Gopalda's intended trip to Pondicherry. After breakfast, Gopalda came to take leave of the Maharishi. He brought the wooden case with Radha Krishna's murtis in it and showed it to the Maharishi. The Maharishi took the box in his hands, and as the light was poor in the darkish corner of the veranda, he turned it this way and that and looked at those murtis. Then he returned it to Gopalda without comment. Gopalda was kneeling before him and told him that he would be leaving for Pondicherry. He also told the Maharishi of his plan to visit the three religious centers. 1. The Vaishnava center, Sri Rangam. 2. The Shakta center, Meenakshi at Madurai. And 3. The Shaiva center, Rameswaram. He asked the Maharishi's blessings so that his pilgrimage would be crowned with success. The Maharishi beamed at Gopalda and nodded his head to signify his assent. And then Gopalda asked the Maharishi for his permission to take me with him. The Maharishi smiled his permission again, tilting his head. The Maharishi instructed the ashram office to arrange to send Balaram Reddy to meet us at Vidupuram on our way to the south with letters to the Maharishi's devotees at Sri Rangam. Balaram Reddy was also instructed by the Maharishi to arrange for Gopalda's stay at a house in Madurai where he had had his realization. Lastly, Balaram Reddy carried letters addressed to the temple authorities at Rameswaram to arrange for Gopalda's reception when he arrived there. I have decided to record here what Gopalda later told me about his experiences at Ramanashram, with the instruction to relate this to the Maharishi in seclusion on my final return to Thiruvannamalai. Gopalda said that the moment he set foot on the station platform at Thiruvannamalai, he found the whole environment surcharged with one persistent inquiry like mantra, "Who am I?" Gopalda said there was no getting away from this inquiry, which kept repeating itself with hammering blows. These two last words were Gopalda's. He said he could find no relief from this terrible counterattempts. He tried several answers, but all in vain. For instance, when he said, "I am Krishna Prem," the retort was, "Who is Krishna Prem? Who is Krishna Prem?" Then Gopalda said, "I am Sri Krishna's Das servant." The immediate reaction was the inquiry, "Who is Sri Krishna?" No matter what reply Gopalda gave, there was no escape or respite from that ever-sounding, agonizing inquiry. Gopalda went on to say that when he came and sat before the Maharishi, that this ever-persistent phenomenon kept on and he felt desperate. Then Gopalda changed his tactics and asked the question, "Who are you?" And with this question, he looked at the Maharishi. He said he was not prepared for what followed. The Maharishi or the Maharishi's body just vanished. He was startled, but he said he realized what the Maharishi wanted to convey. The real Maharishi was not that body, possessing mind, life force, etc. But the answer still evaded him. He told me that he spent the whole of that night walking restlessly. There was no peace for him. He confided to me that he asked Radharani who Sri Krishna was, but he did not tell me what answer Radharani gave him, though her answer eased the otherwise unbearable situation. And you will remember that the Maharishi sent some flowers next morning and that Gopalda was a little less tense. But he continued to be harried because he could not find the proper answer to the Ratabij-like inquiry. A reference to the legendary story of the Asura Ratabij, whose every drop of blood, when shed, gave birth to another Ratabij demon. Now, we come to the morning that Gopalda started singing. Gopalda told me that as soon as he started singing, he lost consciousness. He went into a trance and for the first time in his life experienced Ananda. Yes, this is what Gopalda confided to me, though I confess that the inept words are mine. After I got back to the ashram, I took the first opportunity to narrate to the Maharishi not only these incidents, but also all the other amazing things that befell Gopalda. There was no one else present except a Telugu friend of mine to act as an interpreter if needed. The Maharishi listened without any outward reaction until I came to Gopalda's version of what happened to him when he started to sing on that fateful morning. "Now here I cry a cavi. I confess fully and freely that I just could not utter the word Ananda. Why? Well, I was told that Brahmananda was reserved for only those who trod the Advaita path. So I kept fumbling." Gopalda said that he felt, Gopalda thought that he, and so on. Slowly, the Maharishi turned to me and uttered a single word, Anandam. I had been staying at Ramanashram for about a year when Gopal Das came for the Maharishi's darshan. I have tried in passing to convey the Maharishi's usual normal behavior towards men. Seemingly, he gave the impression that he was not at all concerned with what men did or said or how they acted. But occasionally, he did not hesitate to show his displeasure if any gross lapse occurred. So, I was astonished beyond words to find the same Maharishi acting like a human being for a change in Gopal Das' case. One cannot question the genuineness of the affection and loving care the Maharishi showed for Gopal Das. He asked Doraiswami, one of the oldest disciples of Sri Aurobindo, whose pecuniary help sustained the Pondicherry ashram in those early days, if he had met Gopal Das. The Maharishi said to him that Gopal Das was a rare specimen of a sadhaka in whom both bhakti and jnana resided side by side. My friend, the late veterinary doctor Ananta Narayan Rao, gave me this account. He told me that most of those who were present that morning when Gopal Das sang could see that Gopal Das was no stranger at all, that he could not even play the musical instrument, and above all, he sang in a language not known to the listeners. But still, Dr. Rao felt moved and tears gathered in his eyes. Dr. Rao told me that the Maharishi's comment was that if three such Param Bhagavats loudly sang devotional songs, atheists would become peace. Rao did not know why the Maharishi said three. Swami Viswanathan, perhaps the oldest devotee of the Maharishi, told me that they were all amazed to witness this uncharacteristic reaction of Bhagavan. Before closing this account of the first leg of Gopal Das' trip to South India, I would like to clarify certain points. A. Matumama, in his book Yogi Sri Krishna Prem, states that Gopal Das first came to me, or words to that effect. This is incorrect. Gopal Das visited Pondicherry after his stay at Tiruvannamalai. B. My attention has been drawn to some stories which are being circulated about what happened at Ramanashram. I have no hesitation in saying that such stories are not correct. In truth, they are just stories, figments of the mind, fictions only. I would like to inform those imaginative persons that such fabrications do not add any extra luster and glory to the life and doings of such Mahatmas as Gopal Das. In fact, they serve to detract from that greatness, because sooner or later the truth will come out. I would request those who are interested to know the real facts, at times absolutely incredible, wait patiently for the next installment of this saga. Lastly, I would remind those authors of fairy tales that truth is stranger than fiction. To be continued.